Welcome to the BJC Podcast. I'm Charles Washington Jr., Education and Outreach Specialist at the BJC. In this episode, you'll hear from Minister Leah Brown of the First Baptist Church of Asheville in North Carolina. Many thanks to the church for allowing us to share this sermon in honor of one of our Baptist heroes on MLK Day 2018. I hope you enjoy the episode.
I have a dream. Those four particular words which came to define the speech given on August 28, 1963 by Martin Luther King Jr. in front of more than 200,000 people at the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom are forever seared into my own heart and mind, even though King gave this speech 2 years and 4 months before I was born. I can't tell you exactly when I first saw. Well, it was more like first experienced the video of the end of Dr. King's speech. But I can tell you that his words moved me and then began transforming me and what I believed about what was possible about racial equality initially and then about justice in general. I want to take a few moments and remind you what he said. I say to you today, my friends, so even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. Yes, it is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day down in Alabama, with its vicious racist, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day, right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and little white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted and every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places will be made plain and the crooked places will be made straight and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed. And all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with new meaning, "Mine country, 'tis of thee, sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride, from every mountainside let freedom ring." And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. And so let freedom ring from the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire. Let freedom ring from the mighty mountains of New York. Let freedom ring from the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania. Let freedom ring from the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado. Let freedom ring from the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring. And when this happens, when we allow freedom ring, We will let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city. We will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing the words of the old Negro spiritual, "Free, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last." These are such powerful words for me. Of course, when I started to school in the early 1970s, I didn't know much about racial equality because there were no African American people attending my school or living in my neighborhood. In fact, it wasn't until seventh grade that the first black girl started attending my school. And at Inca High School in the early 80s, there were only a handful of black students. So to say the least, my experience with diversity was extremely limited. Despite these experiences, I was moved by Dr. King's words about his own children. "I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character." See, I loved reading biographies in middle school, and I figured out that when King made this speech, his youngest daughter, Bernice, was only 5 months old. And it was clear to me then that Bernice, who was not so much older than me, was probably living with the deep pain of prejudice, and I knew that was wrong. It wasn't until college that I began having meaningful relationships with people who weren't just like me. I think that my need to study both individual and group behavior drew me to the study of psychology and then social work. I wanted to understand and help people, all people, with the things that stood between them and a whole and abundant life. Jesus said, "I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." And in the back of my mind, I always knew that Dr. King was right when he said, "God intends for all of his children to have the basic necessities of life. And he has left in this universe enough and to spare for that purpose." So racial inequality, poverty, homelessness, hunger, limited access to health care, ageism, sexism, and a whole host of other issues were all identified threats to the well-being of people that I felt I'd been called to serve. Dr. King said it best, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere." Martin Luther King knew so much about the creative tension of being persecuted for righteousness' sake while holding on to his dream of justice. I think it's important to be reminded of a few important facts of his story. He was actually born Michael King Jr. on January 15, 1929, in Atlanta, Georgia. His father adopted the name Martin Luther in honor of the German monk and Protestant reformer who lived from 1483 to 1546. Michael Jr. later adopted that same name. He was the son, grandson, and great-grandson of Baptist ministers, and then he became one himself. He valued education, and it was reported that he skipped both the 9th and 11th grades before entering Morehouse College at age 15. In 1948, he earned his sociology degree from Morehouse, graduated from Crozer Theological Seminary in 1951, completed his doctoral work in systematic theology at Boston University in 1955, when he was only 25 years old. He married Coretta Scott in June 1953, on the lawn of Coretta's childhood home in Marion, Alabama. Dr. King was the identified leader of the civil rights movement from December of 1955, when he served as spokesperson for the Montgomery bus boycott until his assassination on April the 4th, 1968. That's just less than 13 years. Information from the King Center website indicated that King was greatly influenced by the teachings and practice of Mahatma Gandhi. And I quote, "While others were advocating for freedom by any means necessary, including violence, Martin Luther King Jr. used the power of words and acts of nonviolent resistance, such as protest, grassroots organizing, and civil disobedience, to achieve seemingly impossible goals. He went on to lead similar campaigns against poverty and international conflict, always maintaining fidelity to his principles that men and women everywhere, regardless of color or creed, are equal members of the human family. Dr. King was elected president of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference in 1957. This was the founding organization providing leading leadership for the civil rights movement. In 1963, he wrote a letter from a Birmingham jail after leading a nonviolent campaign in the city that was met with attack dogs and water hoses. And he gave the I Have a Dream speech in Washington. King's work was causing a major shift in public opinion, and by 1964, Congress passed the Civil Rights Act. That same year, at age 35, he won the Nobel Peace Prize. Continued political pressure pushed passage of the Voting Rights Act in 1965. Dr. King shifted his focus then, until about 1968, by speaking out about economic injustices to the poor in America, injustices that the poor in America faced. This campaign recognized the plight of people from all races who were challenged economically. His life ended tragically when he was assassinated at the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, Tennessee on April the 4th, 1968. For me, the lesson of Dr. King's life is his commitment and dedication to seeking justice for all people. When I read or hear his words, I call into question my own actions, and I ask myself if I'm doing enough to bring about what people dream for in our world today: peace, love, and justice. Am I living in such a way that Christ can use my life to care for his beloved children that I come in contact with each day? Before I close, I want to share one last challenge from Dr. King. He said this: "But though I was initially disappointed at being categorized as an extremist, as I continued to think about the matter, I gradually gained a measure of satisfaction from the label. Was not Jesus an extremist for love? Love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you. Was not Amos an extremist for justice? Let justice roll down like waters, and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. Was not Paul an extremist for the Christian gospel? I bear in my body the marks of the Lord Jesus. Was not Martin Luther an extremist? Here I stand, I cannot do otherwise, so help me God. And John Bunyan, I will stay in jail to the end of my days before I make a butchery of my conscience. And Abraham Lincoln, this nation cannot survive half slave and half free. And Thomas Jefferson, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal." So the question is not whether we will be extremists, but what kind of extremists will we be? Will we be extremists for hate or for love? Will we be extremists for preservation of injustice or for the extension of justice? In that dramatic scene on Calvary's Hill, three men were crucified. We must never forget that all three were crucified for the same crime, the crime of extremism. Two were extremists for immorality and thus fell below their environment. The other, Jesus Christ, was an extremist for love, truth, and goodness, and thereby rose above his environment. Perhaps the South, the nation, and the world are in dire need of creative extremists. As we go today, I think it is important to honestly ask ourselves if we are willing to be like Christ, an extremist for love, truth, and goodness in this world, so that we can help ourselves and others find and follow what God dreams for us, so that we are all free at last.
Thanks for listening, and thanks again to the First Baptist Church of Asheville and Minister Leah Brown for allowing us to share their MLK Day sermon. Be sure to follow the BJC on Twitter @BJC on the Hill and Instagram @Baptist Joint Committee.